Welcome back to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Getty. Dr. Dennis J. Goldford was invaluable during our coverage of the Iowa caucuses, and I'm delighted to have him back on the show to talk about his new book, The Constitution of Religious Freedom, God, Politics, and the First Amendment. Dr. Goldford, thank you for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
It's certainly a pleasure.
I'm fascinated with the very first sentence of your introduction. I want to read it. Despite, or perhaps even because of, the prohibition of an officially established church in the United States, religion has always been a factor in American politics. Dennis, can you start by talking about that possibility, that it's that very prohibition on a state religion that helps keep the language of faith in our political process?
Well, as many scholars have noted, in cases of officially established religions in other countries, that fact often serves to deaden them. People treat religion as something that the government sponsors, and it's something that's not really theirs and personal to them. And in our system, we have a kind of religious laissez-faire. In other words, government is not supposed to intervene and put its finger on the scale in favor of or against any particular religion. And it leaves it to various religions to attract their adherents and to reinforce affirmation of their own faith traditions to the interest and the emotional and intellectual attachment of individual citizens who make their own religious choices.
Mm-hmm. How do diverse individual belief systems ever coalesce around a particular candidate?
Well, that's a difficult path they all attempt to negotiate. And when we saw Reverend Jeffress last fall suggest, for example, that Governor Romney as a Mormon wasn't truly a Christian, and you had some pushback on the part of people saying we're not electing a theologian-in-chief, we're electing a commander-in-chief, and that what matters is a person's position on public policy issues and a person's general moral stature, not the theological justification behind that. However, a lot of folks still do think that that theological element is and should be an important part of our politics, and that's what I seek to address in the book itself.
There are a lot of people who have followed his words and his change of position who think, look, all that means is he had a candidate, and now that that candidate is not going to make it, he goes to another candidate, but they're both of the same party. This isn't about religion or theology. It's sheerly about politics.
Well, I had a very bright student once who took the class I originated the thoughts that led to this book in that was called Law, Politics, and Religion. And she put it in a very pithy way. She said, if you combine religion and politics, you get politics. And I think that reflects what you just said in the case of Reverend Jeffress, perhaps. But I think the core element of what I'm trying to do is be extremely respectful to people of all sorts of religious orientation, whether a particular denomination or a well-considered opposition to some sort of religious orientation. And the core element, I think, of our constitutional system is that the Constitution does not protect religion. It protects religious freedom.
Right.
And that's a very different way of understanding what we have. And the core to the idea of religious freedom is that individuals have the right under our system of government to make their own religious choices and their own religious decisions. And the pushback against that point of view doesn't come from necessarily atheists or people like that. It comes from people who believe they hold religious truth.
Dennis, most people, I think, would say the Constitution and religious freedom. I think you intentionally worded it, the Constitution of religious freedom. Talk about that a minute.
Sure, that's very perceptive of you. I am playing with the terminology a little bit. On the one hand, the Constitution of religious freedom, the title, suggests that our Constitution is one of religious freedom. Okay, so it creates religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But the second meaning of this is, what is it that constitutes religious freedom? And that's where I go to what I call in there the secularity principle, which is not the same as secularism.
Right.
But I'm focusing on the Constitution as one that promotes religious freedom, but also on the question of what is it that constitutes, what is it that makes or comprises religious freedom.
What themes emerged for you that could be useful to us in understanding the relationship between faith and politics in America today?
Well, I remember being very struck in the 2004 presidential campaign, hearing one particular woman being interviewed who said she was voting for and recommended voting for President Bush because he was a good Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the sentiment she was reflecting, but I was concerned because I thought that kind of claim, vote for him because he's a good Christian, licenses someone else to say vote against him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a good Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And what this led to is my thought that, you know, politics is not about truth with a capital T. Religion might be, but politics is not. Politics, at least in a liberal democracy of the sort set up by our Constitution, has to do with finding a way for us to live together amidst all these competing claims to truth that all sorts of people and religious groups make. So that's been central to me. Politics is what enables us to live together with people with whom we have very significant differences, among which religious differences are probably one of the most important types.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of us, as you know, concerned about the growing encroachment of religion in politics. Do you see this as an overreaction, if in fact it's just a more organized expression of interests that have always been in play?
Well, you know, we have an increasingly diverse country. We had for maybe 150 years or so a kind of de facto Protestant hegemony in the country. But you have, of course, the immigration of all sorts of Roman Catholics to the country who endured tremendous prejudice in the 19th century and early 20th century, and then Jews emigrating, of course, and people of other faith traditions. And we've had, as particularly, I think, since the 1960s, a kind of reaction to the 1960s. I compare, really, on a very sketchy sense, because I haven't done the historical work, but, you know, the 1960s were kind of parallel to the Reformation. It was an attempt to enhance the liberty and autonomy of the individual against older traditions and authorities and orthodoxies, just as the Reformation did. In the Counter-Reformation, there was an attempt to reestablish older orthodoxies and authority systems. And in much of the religious and conservative politics since the 1970s, you've had a reaction against the 1960s counterculture, if you will, that's attempted to reaffirm these older religious and other sorts of orthodoxies. And I think that's where religious conservatism has come in to become a very important factor of our politics, this attempt to return to the good old days when people knew what was what and what was right and what was wrong. And that's difficult somewhat in an increasingly diverse country.
What do you look for over the next several months before Election Day in terms of the way these issues are going to play out in this election year?
Well, an interesting question will be to the extent to which conservative evangelicals' dislike of the president will be sufficient to override the reluctance of some of them to vote for Governor Romney because of his Mormon faith tradition. So, you know, most bets are that the dislike of the president will trump their concern or apprehensions about the governor's Mormonism. So that's something that will come into play. But I think we've already seen, particularly since the 2010 elections, all sorts of moves in all sorts of state legislatures, as well as some moves in Congress, to reassert the agenda of religious, especially Christian conservatism, with regard to social issues like prayer and abortion and same-sex marriage and things like that. So we have a lot of people who believe on the conservative side that they lost elections in 06 and 08 because they weren't conservative enough. So they've come back with a conservative vengeance, I think, this time around. And that plays out in the areas of concern to social and religious conservatives as well.
Hmm.
they will hold Governor Romney's feet very closely to the fire in terms of the National Republican platform and in terms of the sorts of promises he made during the primary season.
Right. I've been talking to Drake University professor Dr. Dennis J. Goldford, whose new book is called The Constitution of Religious Freedom, God, Politics, and the First Amendment. Dr. Goldford, this is an important book, and I want to thank you for writing the book. I want to thank you for coming on State of Belief Radio and helping us understand the book. Dr. Goldford, thank you again for being with us.
Great pleasure. You're very kind.